Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Dan O'Leary, joined by my colleagues Whit Mateau and Evan Caldwell. Thank you for coming out for this session. We're going to talk today about ArcGIS Online, administering your ArcGIS organization through scripting. But just as a caveat, it says ArcGIS Online explicitly in the title, but really we're talking about administering your portal with a small p, if you will, meaning that this is a talk about scripting and advanced administration for both your ArcGIS Online organization as well as for your on-premises portal implementation. So I think everything that we'll talk about in here applies equally to both. So we won't try to distinguish between the differences, but I did just want to draw that out as we begin the session. So again, thank you for participating, and we'll jump right into it. So you're now on day 4 of the conference. It's Thursday afternoon. You had a long plenary session on Monday. You heard all kinds of vision coming out of Jack and seen many demonstrations, and you've gone through many different tech workshops. You're getting ready for the party tonight, so there's a lot of things that have been going on. So I thought I'd take just a second to recap the main things, right? The main things that you started to hear on Monday, that GIS is getting smarter, integrating and leveraging many innovations, bringing in all kinds of new data sets, bringing in all sorts of new capabilities to your organization and to your operations. A smart GIS connects everyone. Everyone's connected to the smart GIS. Internal constituents, external constituents, everyone's riding on this web GIS concept. And the smart GIS integrates everything. There are no barriers. You can bring everything into your smart GIS and do amazing things with your smart GIS. So now is the time to act. And I think with the people that are in here, you think about these messages and you think, wow. I'm the person responsible for administering and managing this thing that's going to integrate everyone, connect everything, and do everything that we can only imagine today. That's a big responsibility, right? So the time to act is really about a time to learn how to administer your web GIS through scripting. It's really about learning new techniques to efficiently manage your enterprise, efficiently manage your web GIS. The truth is, it's not getting any easier, right? I mean, it's bringing more and more capabilities, but as administrators and those responsible for managing the system, maintaining it, keeping it up to date, maintaining users and groups and content, it's a large undertaking. And we recognize that. So we're trying to bring tools and capabilities to the system that allow you to have a great administration experience, new capabilities for doing that. And one of the really powerful capabilities built into the system is the scripting mechanisms for being able to do that. So that's what we're going to talk about in this session, is what work it is that we're trying to do to empower you to be able to more efficiently manage your web GIS. And again, it really is, it's that web GIS. It's the heart of that system that's bringing these new capabilities. And from an administration perspective, we really need to think about the underpinnings of that web GIS. It's something that we call the geoinformation model. The geoinformation model, this is probably a graphic that's very familiar to you, but when we talk about it in the context of geoinformation model, we're really talking about that environment that allows us to abstract your information and to provide a level in the enterprise that just allows all of your data sources to work seamlessly with your applications. If you think back prior to the web GIS pattern, you had applications that connected directly to databases, and you had to worry about things like database schemas and whether my schema matched your schema and how are we going to normalize, and we had to ETL data out of this system to put it in that system. This idea of the web GIS pattern really is seeking to abstract a lot of that complexity and allow systems to communicate through web services into this geoinformation model, which is then aligned with applications and, again, RESTful web services that you can build these experiences and solutions that really enable your end users to accomplish their job. So the geoinformation model, from an administration perspective, is a really important component of the system. And if we think about the geoinformation model, it really is sort of manifests itself out of the through the experience that you have when you use the portal, when you use the system. So these are common terms. So you think about your environment and your organizational web GIS. It's about groups. It's about people, users. Users who are able to collaborate within groups. It's about the content that users are creating and the content that users are sharing. So this is that sort of information architecture that enables this web GIS. So it consists of resources, of groups and content and users and many different item types. There's apps and maps and scenes and layers and tools and files, right? And then there's many, many information, we call them item types, that are contained within these sort of larger categories. As an example, layers. You might have feature layers and WMS layers, right? So this is how, in that geoinformation model, all of this variety of content and information can be managed in a way and exposed in a way to multiple types of clients, mobile clients, desktop clients, browser clients, in a way that is really seamless to the end users and makes itself and lends itself to you as an administrator in a way that allows you to efficiently and effectively manage it. And what are some of those common administrative tasks that you might think about doing in scripting? You know, the user experience in the portal provides a number of capabilities for doing administration, but they're all visual and they're all sort of manual, right? I'm going to add a group of users. I need to explicitly do it through the UI, and I'm going to walk through a series of workflows to do that. Or if I need to manage content, can I do that in the UI? Yes, you can do that in the UI, but really, when it comes down to bulk work and repetitive work, it's great if we can script these things and just allow them to happen through scripts and a managed process. So the list on your screen is just a number of things that we've thought of that are common administrative tasks that really lend themselves well to scripting. And there's probably other ones that you deal with on a daily basis that you've already applied scripting towards, but this is just a few ideas. So with that, let's just jump into a first demo, and Evan's going to give us our first demo. And this is really a use case sample of the power of scripting in the platform, and Evan's going to walk us through a case study of some work that he did using Python at the Department of Homeland Security to really streamline and make their workflow and end users successful.
Yep. Thanks, Dan. So this past winter, Department of Homeland Security decided to make the commitment to push their Highfield data out as open data services. These were data sets that were previously maintained on physical DVDs. They're critical infrastructure data sets that they aggregate and maintain for the entire federal government. So if you were a federal agency user in the past and you wanted some of this data, you would have called them up and they would have snail mailed these DVDs to you, and then you would have extracted them and loaded them into your GIS. So this was a great kind of effort to get that out as open data services. There's about 270 data sets that comprise the Highfield Open data packages. This was not a great story for the GIS analysts that were tasked with actually making that data available. If you've ever published a data set through ArcGIS Online or your portal, you know that there are a few different motions that you have to go through in the interface. You've got to upload your data set, you've got to choose to publish it, and then you might even then have to share it, put it into groups, all those kinds of things. So when you're tasked with a short timeline to publish 270 data sets out, that can be overwhelming. So what we decided to do was use Python scripting to our advantage to really manage as much of that task as possible. And I'm going to show you some of the scripts that we used. And what I want to really emphasize here is that the scripts that you're going to see are not what we started with. They're what we ended with. So this was a work in process that we iterated on as we went and learned additional pain points that then we were able to address with Python. So the first thing I want to do is just show you the Highfield Open data site. If you've never been to it, this is it. And you'll notice that all the data sets are organized into these different groups. So the borders group, for example, we can go ahead and launch into that and see all of the different data sets that are part of this borders category. And so this gets into how do we best manage this process? How are we going to manage the data that we want to load in? And so the people that we were working with, they're not programmers. They have a little bit of Python familiarity. And so what we decided to do was let them just manage the data as they had been. And that was on their disks in folders. So here's an example folder that they would have had. We chose to let them keep it into the groups that these categories would end up. And so the emergency services group, you can see, has a zipped up shapefile in it and a corresponding XML metadata record that they were exporting out from our catalog. Now we can use all this now in a Python script to basically look at this shapefiles directory and start iterating through and uploading all of these data sets. Okay, so here is the Python script we used for this publishing process. This is out on GitHub. If you want to copy the link you see there, you can come up and talk to me after. I can show you how to get to it. There's a lot going on here, but again, it was an iterative process. And so let's go ahead and actually just run the script and kind of look at what happens here. Okay, so a few different components to this. I'm calling my script. I'm telling it which portal I want to push this into. In this case, it's my ArcGIS Online org. And then I'm providing it my username and password. And that's going to authenticate my script to allow it to do certain actions against my account. And then finally, I need to tell it what directory my shapefiles exist in. So when we go ahead and fire this, it's going to go ahead and authenticate. And now it's going to start organizing this content as it uploads it into my content within ArcGIS Online. And you'll notice we're providing feedback along the way. So one of the things you'll see is that it's reporting the size of the data set. That became a really key indicator for us because some of these data sets are not only tens of megabytes, but hundreds of megabytes. And so the script would pause as it worked through the upload process for that particular data set. So the first time you saw it and you didn't know the size, you thought, uh-oh, something's not working right. But by putting the size of the data set, it gives us a little bit of confidence. Okay, I see it. It's larger. It's going to take a little bit longer to process. The other thing you'll notice is that we're providing feedback. Okay, it's created a new item. Now that I have an item in ArcGIS Online, I can use that metadata record to update all the existing information with my authoritative metadata for this particular data set. And finally, once that step has completed, I can initiate the publishing process. Now, the publishing process, like many web actions, is asynchronous. You're launching the process, and it's going to take a certain amount of time. We don't know how long it's going to take. It will change depending on a lot of variables and probably most importantly, the size of the data set and maybe the number of records. So you can see that now that it's finished uploading the five data sets, it's now periodically polling the jobs endpoint in ArcGIS Online to say, hey, which of the jobs have finished, which are still running. And so then it's pausing 60 seconds and waiting. So one of the big things we decided to do here was to write out the results of that to a spreadsheet as it updated. So if I launch this spreadsheet, let's see if I can get this open. You'll notice that we've got a lot of different information coming back. So we're reporting back the name of the data set it's working on, the resulting item ID in ArcGIS Online. We can easily construct a URL to that item. And then most importantly, for these particular items, we're showing the status. And so has this finished, has it not? So we can see that several are still processing. Now here's another key thing. You're going to notice that there's two additional data sets, or I guess really just one that hasn't kicked off yet. And so during this publishing process, we noticed that we had a higher error rate if we tried to push too many data sets at once. So part of this script is actually throttling how many active jobs we can have at one time. It's a really little easy little snippet of code to put in. I go way down here. You can see that it's got a status check, and it's basically just saying, okay, for the number of jobs you've specified, if my current active jobs is less than that, go ahead and push in as many new jobs as I can until I hit my limit again. And so we set a limit of 5 in this case, but you could obviously do a lot more. And then having that result fed back into the spreadsheet, every 60 seconds when that check occurs, this spreadsheet gets recreated. So we could just keep relaunching this spreadsheet to kind of see the current status. This became a really key way for them to manage and maintain what was happening as they started bulk uploading all this information. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and stop that one. Now, once the services were created, they had another challenge. They were uploading that default metadata that came along with their data as they collected it from various agencies. But there were a lot of issues with the metadata, typos, missing fields, inconsistent tags, things like that. So this became another thing that they had to manage and maintain with these services as they put them up. So again, we can use spreadsheets and Python to make this very easy to manage. Here's an example spreadsheet that they will use. Now, this is just one data set, but in practice, they were actually just pushing all the data sets into a gigantic list here. And you can see all they need to do is take that item ID that they got from that job status spreadsheet, put it in here, and then fill out the corresponding information. So things like, okay, what's this data set? What's our snippet going to be? The description? All those kinds of things. And now we can go in and use our script to run that as well. So I just copy my information here. And in this case, we don't even need to really do much with reporting back on the information. We can actually just print out the response from ArcGIS Online that came back, and we see there's a success indicator in there. So when I go back to the item and refresh the page, we'll see that all that additional information we provided in our spreadsheet has come through. And you know, this was a really common occurrence. Did you catch that? There's a typo in there. So let's just go back quickly. And fix it there, rerun our script. Update that. And now we've just very quickly fixed a typo. So these were really common pain points across all these 270 plus data sets. This became a super easy way to kind of manage that. Okay, so I want to talk now about authentication a little bit more. A lot of people that are using ArcGIS Online and Portal are not necessarily using the built-in users that are available there. They're using SAML-based authentication. They're using enterprise logins, things like that. So how do you take a script that's designed for a username and password to instead use your enterprise authentication? And there's a great workflow to do that. So rather than calling out to the generate token endpoint, there's a different OAuth endpoint within ArcGIS Online and Portal that you can use. And when you use SAML-based authentication, you can pass it this information. Here you'll see I've got an app ID and an app secret. Now I've got another script that is designed to bulk update a lot of these groups with new details. It's very similar to the item details. You know, we're maintaining this in a spreadsheet. And let me show you how this one is different. So you'll notice that this particular script is no longer asking me for a username and password. And that's because I'm providing it with my app ID and app secret and the redirect URI. I'll show you how you get that information in a minute, but what I want to show you first is what happens when we run a script that has that. So we'll go ahead and initiate this, and you'll notice that actually it's called out to my browser and launched me to my authentication endpoint. And now, instead of through Python, I'm just logging in through my browser. And once I've successfully authenticated, it's given me an access code that I can provide back to my script. And once I've done that, now my script has everything it needs to do to now start processing that information against my account. Same as that token authentication, just a slightly different workflow. So really easy ways to kind of continue to manage this content, regardless of how you're setting up your user logins, all that kind of information. Okay.
All right.
That's it.
Great. Thank you, Evan. So hopefully from that demonstration, you get a sense of the power of Python in the platform. It really allows you to automate your workflows. It allows you to really work with all aspects of the system. But that was a really advanced case study example for those that might not be as familiar with writing Python and how to get started. So now what we want to do is maybe take a little bit of a step back and talk about that topic, getting started with scripting and what resources are available to you to do that. And then from there, we'll go into some demonstrations where we really start at a really simple level and write some Python code and show you how to get started. So in terms of resources, there's many resources that are out there. We do spend a lot of energy in building great SDKs for developers across many different languages, Python being just one of them. But we do work really hard on our SDKs and the documentation samples. The documentations, the guides are all really great resources for you to get started. And I'll show you a few of those in a few minutes. Open source community code is very prevalent. Lots of code samples are available. Lots of code that are really representative of fully functional capabilities are available. So it's not just little code snippets. It's whole applications or it's whole scripts to do really major packages of work within your portal environment and your web GIS system. Blogs and wikis, and we'll show you again several of those. So we'll take a look at that in just a second. But one thing we do want to highlight today, and you'll see here in just a minute through demonstrations, is a brand new API that we've just released just before the user conference. It's called the ArcGIS Python API, and it's really designed as a new experience, a very Pythonic experience, and you'll see examples of that through the session this afternoon in demos, that allows you to not just manage your organization, but really fully interact with the full capabilities of the web GIS. And we'll show you many different examples of what we mean by that. But it really is sort of that outside-in look at your web GIS and really brings some pretty incredible power and capabilities into your hand through a scripting environment. And it's very interactive, and you'll see an example of that in just a minute. Let's go ahead and flip over and take a look at some of those resources that we talked about. And then we'll jump into some more demos. This page that we're looking at here is the page that's for developers, the ArcGIS REST API. Within this website is the real details of how ArcGIS works in a RESTful way. It dives into several details and provides you code samples and sample input that you would send for a particular method or operation, the expected response syntax that you would see back as a developer, and really helps you guide through those particular aspects of your work with scripting. So we talked about, I think I've lost my network connection. We talked about a few minutes ago about that geoinformation model. And the importance of that geoinformation model and understanding what that geoinformation model is all about. So coming here to the documentation site, when we look through the various things that are available to us through the REST API documentation, here's that resource hierarchy of the system, of the web GIS system, and you can see how it's organized. Just like we talked about, it's organized with communities, and communities consist of groups and users create content and items. And on any one of these things, as a person writing scripts or building apps using the API, let's say, for instance, I'm interested in how do I add an item through scripting, then this resource hierarchy gives me a really quick way, almost like a table of contents, where I can drill down into the details, gives the documentation, gives us a lot of information, tells us how this works, gives us what this should look like in terms of the parameters going in and the data coming out. It makes it really a great resource for developers to get started. So documentation is something we put a lot of time and effort into trying to provide that great experience as a developer. Obviously, as developers, we all like samples. GitHub, we have a very vibrant community on GitHub. We have over 800 engineers from inside of Esri who are contributing content into our Esri site. So esri.github.io is the window into these things. So if we come to this page, we try to make it simple for you to find the things that you're interested in. Like I said, we support many different programming languages. So if I'm interested in Python, I have a quick little filter that allows us to narrow all these contributions down by the language that we're interested in. And then you can just sort of troll through here and find any number of things that are relevant to what it is that you're trying to accomplish. But these are always changing and always being updated, and I think people are pretty good about keeping things up to date relative to new releases of the software and those sorts of things. Another resource for you is a brand new website that we just released. It's called codesharing.arcgis.com. I guess the real title is ArcGIS Code Sharing. But again, it's just, you know, this is sort of ArcScripts reinvented or reimagined, right? So it's a new place for you to come, a new modern web experience where you can come and, again, look for those code samples and snippets that others might have contributed. And they're available for all these languages. And again, a really simple way to filter on the results. And we're only looking for Python in this case. And we can sort of look at what's available and drill into it. Another place that you shouldn't forget to look at is just the product documentation. So this is the product documentation for ArcGIS Server. Contains the product documentation for Portal. And if I come into the administrator section, there's a number of administrative helps that are provided to me here to include sample Python scripts. So again, it's another place where we put a lot of time and effort into the documentation and providing samples so that you have available to you what you need in order to accomplish your mission. And one of the last resources I'll just point out is a wiki page that we maintain on GitHub. And there's a number of resources, a number of people contribute to this. This is mostly about information of where to go to find other things. It's a wiki page. And if you scroll down through the wiki page and look for different information about tools that might be available to you, you get any number of resources. And specifically, we're talking today in this session about Python scripting and working with your WebGIS through Python. But obviously, you can work with your WebGIS in other languages as well. And we see many web applications that are developed for doing interactive administration and work. So on this wiki, we list resources that are available to you as an administrator from both the web apps perspective as well as Python perspectives. And sort of summarize the differences in all these tools and make those available to you. And last but not least, and I'll end here because I think this is sort of where WIT is going to pick up, but the developer site for ArcGIS, it's developers.arcgis.com. This is really the primary place where you really want to come as a developer and someone learning how to script. This is the place where you have immediate access to all of the various SDKs that we make available to developers, and in specific to Python, you know, we do have a new section of the developer site that was just created specifically to talk about the options with Python scripting with ArcGIS. So with that, let's go ahead and dive into some demos, and where we're going to start walking through what it looks like to write Python against your WebGIS.
Thanks, Dan. I just wanted to highlight a few things from the last page Dan was on. This is the ArcGIS admin wiki. You can just Google ArcGIS admin wiki and you should be able to find it. It's also available through the GitHub site. But this is I think this is a good place to go to start if you're wondering what resources are available in the way of administration. As Dan said, a lot of administrative tasks lend themselves well to scripting. Some of them may work better as a graphical interface that you actually work through a web browser on, but maybe it doesn't exist in the ArcGIS you know, portal or ArcGIS Online website yet. So I would come check this out. There are a number of admin tools. I'll just highlight a couple. For example, there's a pretty sophisticated set of tools available from GeoJob. It's a partner of Esri. They have something called admin tools. Also, ArcGIS Online Assistant is very useful for just copying a few items between your portals. And when it comes to Python modules, if you are needing to write sort of production scripts today, I just wanted to highlight a couple of these that I think you'll find useful. There's PortalPy, which is a pure Python module that works through the REST APIs of your server and WebGIS components. It does work primarily with your portal, so it's going to be for managing content, users, groups, that sort of thing. Pretty easy to use and get started. The other one I wanted to point you to is ArcREST, which works both with your portal as well as ArcGIS server. I think you can think of this as more of like a power user type of module. So those are available today. You know, they were started by Esri. They're out there for the community to use. And again, if you wanted to get started today writing production scripts, that might be the place to go. But as Dan was alluding to, I think we've started to acknowledge that you know, this need to do scripting of the entire WebGIS is something that really needs to be part of the platform. So we've been working on something new called the ArcGIS Python API, which is not going to be sort of a separate thing managed, you know, through GitHub and this wiki. It's just going to be built into the platform. So if you've been to the developer site lately, you've noticed that it's changed a little bit. One thing you may have noticed is that there's now a new section focused specifically on scripting and automation. So as Dan said, you know, Python is the language of choice really for scripting and automating, you know, ArcGIS. If we come down here a little bit, you'll see that there's really two options. There's ArcPy, and then there's the new ArcGIS Python API. Have you guys used ArcPy? Maybe a quick show of hands. Okay, great. So you guys know what ArcPy is. I think of ArcPy. ArcPy is great. It, you know, really lets you work with your GIS within your GIS at sort of a very low level. You're working with feature classes and tables, and you can have cursors through rows. You can edit. You know, you can use that to build MXDs and layer files and manage sort of the nuts and bolts of your GIS down at that level. I would think of ArcGIS Python API as working almost from the outside in, working with the entire WebGIS, not just sort of the data and the bits and the MXDs, but the geoinformation model through your entire WebGIS that Dan was talking about. But I think it's easiest just to sort of see it in action. So we're going to jump in to a Python console. This is PyCharm. This is sort of my Python IDE of choice. And I'm going to start by importing the Python API. Okay. I'm going to import some passwords so you guys aren't seeing a username and password. So now I'm ready to get going. So I can say my GIS, and I point it to my GIS, which in this case is an ArcGIS Online organization. So it's connecting to my GIS. Great. So I can start looking at users, for example. So the users, I'll just list those out. All right. And let's see what that came back with. Okay, so this is an array of users in my organization. So these are the users. I have 10 users in my organization. I can also look at me. I'm logged in here. So let's see who I'm logged in as. Okay, so me.firstname. Okay, that's me, Whit Mateau. I can see what my role is. I can also get access to other properties. So for example, see how much storage I'm using. About 253 megabytes. So So here I'm kind of reporting on what's happening in my organization. I can actually do more, though. I can, for example, update. So I can actually update some of my preferences, or logged in as an administrator, I could go through and update the role of users programmatically. You can start to see how that might happen. So those are users. I can also explore groups. I'll just list out the groups. And like with users, this is going to give me an array of objects. So let's kind of go through and see what's in here. Okay, so I've got a few groups, and let's just take one of those.
You have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is there a question?
Is all this documented already in the RDS online output? Like the Enterprise documentation?
Yeah, actually, we'll switch over to the developer site, and I'll kind of show you what's there. And the short answer is what I'm showing right now is in beta, but it's a public beta. You can sign up, and there is documentation available. So I'll point you to that in just a moment. Yep. So I'm just going to grab the first group in here, and I can see that, you know, in addition to looking at properties, I can actually invite users to groups. So you can see, as an administrator, I can start to put these things together to, you know, I could list all of the users, invite those users to groups, things like that. And I can also, of course, work with content. So let's search for some content. So we'll go to content. And then search. We'll just search for content related to Los Angeles. And again, this has given me an array of items. All right. So I have, let's see, 5 items related to LA. So I'm looking at their titles there. So here I'm working within a Python console. This is where probably a lot of you are working. Maybe you're not running these things interactively. I mean, a lot of this automation would be written into scripts, and those scripts would be run on scheduled basis and things like that. There is another cool thing that comes with the ArcGIS Python API, which is this new thing we call notebooks. So the way that the ArcGIS Python API is actually delivered is using Conda, or Anaconda. So Conda is both a package manager as well as a environment manager. And Anaconda includes a number of different libraries for doing visualization and more analytics. But one of the things that it comes with is this thing called notebooks. So what this is it's actually web-based. You can see I'm in a web browser, and I'm working with what is essentially a Python console that can be organized into a notebook. So let's start working with it. So I can say, let's bring in, start bringing in my pieces. And then there's some cool display capabilities I wanted to bring in as well, so you can see how those work. Okay, so I've got my pieces set up. Let's get connected again. Okay, now you can see there's a little asterisk there. Okay, now it's a 2. When you see that little asterisk there, it means it's working, or it's doing something. And then when the number shows up, that means that step has been completed. Okay, so let's just do the same thing really quickly. So we're going to search for items in LA. But before I do that, actually, let me just do this here. One of the cool features of the notebook is if you don't know what something is, you just add a question mark at the end, and it'll bring up the help for that object. So here, I'm now looking at the help for the GIS object, and I can see what properties it has, what functions it has, etc. But it also has some nice IntelliSense. So if I just hit Tab, I can see what are the aspects of my GIS that I can start working with. And I think this is an interesting thing to sort of think about: is what are the I think you guys are all working with ArcPy, so like us, you know what the GIS is, what ArcGIS is at the very bottom. This is kind of a different approach. It's what are the parts of your GIS from the outside in? And well, you know, your GIS has content, right? It has items, it has data. It also has data stores, which might be interesting from an administrator perspective to work with. Data stores for features, data stores for observations. It has groups, it has users, it has mapping capability. It also has tools for analytics. So this is really my GIS from the perspective of outside in. So let me come in and I'll do my search for LA. And we will assign this to my items, and then I'll, instead of printing it, I'm going to use this display function. And what's pretty cool about this is, as a notebook, I'm now getting a visual display. And this is all built into the notebook capabilities. So within the notebook, it knows how to display items in a way that's user-friendly. This is similar to what it would look like if I went into the portal and started searching for these things. And then I have the link, and I can open it up and such. I can also work with maps. So let's create a map from my GIS, and let's put that map in Los Angeles, and then we'll just display it, see what happens. Okay, it's actually putting an interactive map centered in Los Angeles into my notebook. Now, what's cool about that, in addition to having an interactive map, I don't have to go and geocode Los Angeles, get the extent, load the map, center the map over that extent. It's sort of all built in because, for me as a administrator, I may not need to know all that stuff. I just want to make it nice and easy in Pythonic. So I'm just creating a map of Los Angeles, and here I am. But I can start doing some things with that. So now if we can imagine a little bit of a scenario here, maybe I'm working on a project related to the Vision Zero initiative, which is all about reducing pedestrian and bicycle deaths to zero in Los Angeles. So I have my own GIS here, and I want to start pulling in other content. So maybe I'm going to go to the GeoHub, which is LA's civic engagement platform. So let's connect to the GeoHub. And I'm not going to provide any username and password here. I'm just going to go as an anonymous user and start working with their content. So let's see what they have in the way of health layers. I'm going to search for health. I'm going to look specifically for feature layers. And then let's just do this. All right, so it's going over to the GeoHub. It's going to pull back the first 10, top 10 results for health. And if I look through here, I can find out what might be interesting to me. I'm actually going to take that high injury network. So locations where pedestrian, so this is where, from a collision fatality perspective, where most of the injuries and fatalities are happening. So let's, I'll just assign that to a variable here. So the first one in that list. And then let's go ahead and add it to the map. Okay, let's go back up to my map. And it's added that high injury network to the map. So that's pretty cool. Now you can start to imagine here, I'm maybe not doing this from an administrative perspective, but this is a new way of exploring not just your web GIS, but other web GISs, and sort of orchestrating workflows in such a way that they can be scripted and run, but also in a way that's visually appealing and can be understood by others. So in a way, it's like sharing tradecraft. It's not just sharing the answer, which might be a story map. It's what are the steps that I took to get there? So maybe Los Angeles could share this with Chicago and New York, and they could repeat this pattern. So that was me kind of exploring, doing some lightweight analysis and bringing things together. But maybe I also want to use this to put data into the system. So I have this spreadsheet here of schools. In this case, I do have the latitude and longitude of all these schools. These are the schools in the LA Unified School District. There's about, I think, 1,100 or so. So I want to put this into my GIS so that I can start working with it. So the data is right over here. And then I'm going to put this into my GIS. So content, add, and I'm not going to give it any title, properties, information right now. I'm just going to put it in there. So now it's taking that spreadsheet and it's going and putting it into my organization, which in this case is an ArcGIS Online organization. Okay, just completed. So if I go over to my content and just refresh, I should see this school's CSV item in my portal. Now, if you've worked with items, imagine a lot of you have. The CSV type is basically just that file in my web GIS. All I can really do with it at this point is download it. But that's not really all that useful. What I really want to do is make it a layer that can then be added together with other layers and maps and so on. So to do that, all I have to do is publish. Now what it's doing is it's going to that CSV file and in my organization, it's turning all 1,100 of those records in the spreadsheet into features that are managed in my GIS and creates a school's layer that can then be mapped and combined with other data. Now, in this case, that spreadsheet had latitude and longitude. If all I had was address, then I could pass in as arguments to the publish operation information on what columns are used for addresses and so on. So you can see it created this new schools layer. It's a feature service, and I go back to my content, I should see it there as well. There we go. And now I can actually add this to a map. There we go, there are the schools, and you're familiar with all this. Now I can start doing the smart mapping and whatever I need to do to continue my work on this project. So we started by using the API to explore and work with MyGIS as well as other GIS systems and start bringing things together. We can also use it to publish to the GIS. There's also quite a bit you can do in the way of administrating. I hinted to some of those things as we were going through the Python console demo. I'm going to take you back to the developer site here for a moment. There's a number of sample notebooks that are already available as part of the beta. I'm just going to highlight a few that are related to administration. So as Evan was talking about earlier, a lot of folks like to work with spreadsheets. You might be dealing with others in your organization that, you know, when you say what groups do you need for, you know, your department, they might give you a spreadsheet, right? So this is a notebook that shows how you can take a spreadsheet, bring it into the notebook, and behind the scenes it's using something called Pandas, which is a library within Python that comes with the whole notebook and Anaconda suite, which in addition to making it nice for working with data in the way of data frames, also provides a nice way to visualize those tables. I can pull in some icons, and then this is really the meat of it here. Basically, we're opening up the spreadsheet, we're turning the rows into dictionaries, and then we're calling the create group from dictionary function on the GIS groups. And that's basically it. And then we have a nice display for the groups that just got added. So that's another example of doing some administration. Also, something that comes up a lot in the context of ArcGIS Online is what's happening in the way of credits. So like pandas for the table and some of the display functions we showed in the notebook, it also comes with some nice libraries for working with statistics, and then also for displaying charts. So here we can see we're getting usage information from the GIS. This is really the, where is it? this is really the meat of it here. We're basically saying, give me the usage from this start time to this end time, increment it by day, and then I'm looking for geocode counts grouped by username and type. So with all the users in my organization, you know, how many credits are they using for geocoding? And then it's using NumPy as well as Bokeh to do a little fancy work here on creating a chart that looks like this. So the ArcGIS Online and Portal website comes with some charting capabilities. If you probably explored that as administrators, you can go and view status, and it comes with some nice charting. But maybe there's other metrics you're looking to put things together with, or you want to render the charts in different ways. You can do all that now using the usage function on the GIS through Python, as well as some of the charting capabilities that come as part of the Python API. There's other ones in here for cloning users, groups, and content, as well as things like updating URLs in items. And then there is a API reference here that goes into all of the capabilities of these different operations and objects on your GIS. I personally find it easiest to just work with that stuff from the notebook, but this is sort of a complete reference as well. So I think with that, I guess one thing I didn't show a lot about was how you could use this Python API to do analysis. And I think what's interesting, when we got started doing administration with Python on the web GIS, a lot of it started with users, groups, and items, and managing these sorts of things. But I think what's starting to happen is sort of the combination of all of the things we've shown coming into scripts that are used for managing items. That could be go get this from the GeoHub, bring it in, do a spatial analysis, create this new layer, and put it in my GIS. So I'm always looking at fresh data that's the result of some analysis, and run that thing once a day. That's, I think, a new kind of use case that we see emerging as more and more of this data becomes open and there's more collaboration. So I think Dan's going to tie it all together with a last demo that really shows how those pieces can work together. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Whit. Yeah, and like Whit said, this is not just for this idea of being able to work with notebooks. It's not just for administrators. It's for any user of the web GIS who's comfortable using Python. It's just available to them to be able to automate some workflows or interactively use the system. So it's another option. But let's face it, most organizations view all of you, the administrators of their web GIS, as some sort of superhero, right? That's why we sell all those cool t-shirts down in the store. And you went back from the user conference wearing your Map Girl or Map Man t-shirt and your Map Man hat. And a problem has come to light that we need to do some really cool work with, but it's going to be hard. So who do we go to get? We go to get that map superhero. So in this case, we have a little scenario here. This is LA County. We have fires that are happening around us, and we also have critical infrastructure, location where critical infrastructure is located. So this is the map. The point symbols represent the critical infrastructure. The red areas represent the current fire boundaries. The task at hand for the map hero is to do some analysis against the data and tell us which points of critical infrastructure are at risk based on the current fire boundaries. So as a user of ArcGIS Online, I say, oh, that's easy, right? Here I am. I've got my map. I can now start using some of the analysis tools, do some analysis, create a new web map. Easy. But then they add in the last, the and, right? Then the and came along, and we're going to need to do this every 30 minutes for the foreseeable future, as long as these wildfires are happening. Whoa, hang on a second. What? You said every 30 minutes? Yes, every 30 minutes we're going to need to update this information product. Why? Because we're now responsible for sharing a map and a table of information that tells first responders and the public, or maybe whomever is appropriate, where the points of critical infrastructure are at risk based on the current fire boundaries, right? So now this task is just taking on a whole nother level of sophistication, because we need to do it every 30 minutes, right? But we have to go to sleep at some point too. So in comes sort of the power of these notebooks and the power of Python. So again, I can be a user of the system who has the ability to create content in the system, and now I'm going to create a notebook that we can run on a schedule and just allow this information product to be continually updated. So just like we've done in the past demonstrations, the first thing we're going to do is connect to our WebGIS. But when we're going to connect to our WebGIS, we're going to take another step and we're going to open up a group of content and read the items that are contained within that group. So the system is now running, and as Whit said, the little asterisk that shows up in the UI is an indicator that it's working, and you also see this little round circle up here. It gets solid when it's working too. So that first task is completed, and it's provided back to us a list of all of the content that's available inside of this group. Okay, great. So now I want to start to visualize what I'm going to be working with as I work through my analysis. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to add a map to my screen. So again, very simple. Give me a map, Los Angeles, and put it at zoom level 9. Easy, right? Now I've got my map. So what's the first thing I want to do? Well, I actually want to add the current fire boundaries to the map and take a look at it. So again, very simple. Now, who right now is imagining in your mind's eye the clicks that you'd have to be going through in the UI to do this, right? Lots of them, right? And that's all well and good, but boy, there's some real power in this, isn't it? Just really, really fast to be able to do this kind of analysis. So now we have our fire buffers, got them on the map. Next thing I want, or I'm sorry, our fire boundaries. The next thing we want to do is actually buffer these boundaries so that we can establish our analysis area. So again, we're going to run that analysis. You can see it's working in the background, waiting for our return to come back. The return is coming back, and it's executing. Okay, it's finished. Let me keep it here so you can see. All right. We're going to set our sharing permissions on that new item, that new layer that was just created as a result of the analysis. And now we want to take a look at those buffers. We're going to add it to our screen. So boom, really quick, really easy. Now we have our buffers. Now we have our analysis area that we're going to be working with. All right, so the next thing that we want to do is we want to add our critical infrastructure points to the map. So again, I'll scroll up. Now we've got our critical infrastructure. So the next thing is pretty obvious. Now we want to do another analytic operation to determine which of those points fall within the buffers that we had created previously. So this time, as you can see from the command, we're calling our GIS system. We're calling the tools resource. We're asking for analysis and analysis of type overlay layers. We're passing in what it is that we want to do our overlay layer, basically a point and polygon analysis against, and the system comes back. And with that analysis, we're going to set the sharing property on that item. And now we're going to turn this item into a table, because you'll remember in our task, we said we want to create a map and we want to provide a table. So very quickly, we can just do a query of those new features, the point and polygon selection return results, and we can show all of the attribution. And this is cool, but it's really not that pretty, right? So as a professional, we want to provide pretty products. So again, we have the ability to very quickly format that as a table. And this is great on my screen right now, but actually, as part of this workflow, I want to dump this thing out to a CSV every time it runs. So again, very simple. We're taking our data frame and we're saying send it to a CSV and send it to this location on the server. In this case, it should be a server. And that CSV is out on that file system and can be picked up by whatever process is going to disseminate that table now, right? So very, very easy way of doing this. So, all right, where are we at? We understand our problem. We've done our buffers. We've done our analysis. We've got now the critical points of the critical infrastructure that is in risk area based off of those buffers. We've already generated our table. We've written it out to a file system that it can be used by others. So now we want to sort of go to the next step. So let's create a brand new map, right? Let's just create a brand new map, because really what we're going to disseminate is a new web map based off of the results of our analysis. So we've got our new map. And now what we want to do is we just simply want to add the layer that we generated that is the results of the analytics. So here are the six or so critical infrastructure points that fall within those boundaries and are currently considered at-risk facilities. So really, really quick and really easy to be able to create that map. Now, here's the challenge. Now we have a layer, and we're looking at the layer represented on a map, and what we've just done is we've created, we've looked for our web map that's actually disseminating this. So again, in our scenario, we've got one web map, and we want to constantly keep that map updated every 30 minutes. So what I've done is I've said, hey, go fetch that item for me. Go fetch that item from my web GIS. Now I've got that item here inside of my console. What I'm actually going to do now is I'm going to print out the layer that's currently running in that web map. Okay, so this is the current layer that's running in the web map, and you can see the date time group that was stamped on that layer. June 30th at 13:15 hours, right? So that's what's running today. But we just re-ran the analysis. So all we're going to do now is we're just going to sort of rejigger it a little bit, and we're going to say that analytic layer that we just ran just a few seconds ago, take that layer, rewrite our web map. Don't create a new web map. Just take the old layer out of that web map and put the new layer in that web map, right? So the web map doesn't have to be recreated. The web map URL doesn't have to change. Nothing ever has to change. Programmatically, we're just injecting a new URL to tell it where the features are coming from. Really, really easy. So you can see the comparison there, the two different URLs. So this is the one that's coming out. This is the one that's going in. And then the last thing that we're going to do is this is the part where we're going to write the update to our web map. And now our web map is up to date, right? Really nice, right? So I've just completed the workflow. This is what they want to happen. I'm satisfied with the product. I'm satisfied with what I've done. This needs to run every 30 minutes. So I'm not going to sit here clicking the enter button like I just did. I'm just going to go up and I'm going to do a file. And I'm going to save this as a Python script. And then I can take that Python script and run it on whatever I use for my scheduled jobs, whether that be the Windows scheduler or cron jobs or whatever the case may be. So I went from an interactive Pythonic notebook where I'm able to walk through my analysis, get the result I want, and then just save that routine as a Python script, nothing special, just a Python script, and then just follow my organizational procedures for running scheduled jobs and scheduled tasks. This is a whole new dimension of interacting with your web GIS and how that thing can really come to life and support these things. So we're very, very excited about this capability coming to the platform. As Whit mentioned, beta just opened just before this conference. It was released. We encourage all of you to sign up for that beta. And please tell us your thoughts. Tell us what you like. Tell us the bugs that you're running into. It is beta, obviously. And tell us what else you think you should be able to do with this new API so that we can continue to evolve it and make it better. Okay? So with that, the last thing that we need to put up on the screen is thank you very much. And we request that you take a few seconds and provide us some feedback if you wouldn't mind. It's really helpful to us to gauge future sessions that we provide, make sure we're giving them at the right level and the right information. So with that, I think we do have some time left. We're welcome any questions.
Yeah. Suppose I created a new portal, right? And I want to bring all the users from the end up to the new users based on their real roles, like admin, publishers, and non-users. Can I
Sure. So maybe just repeat the question, make sure I got it. So you have a new portal. Is that portal for ArcGIS in particular? So you have portal for ArcGIS. You have a bunch of users in LDAP, and their roles are also defined in LDAP, and you'd like to bring those users into your portal. So the so there's an out-of-the-box capability within portal to bring the users from LDAP into portal, and there's also the ability to so there's different ways of authenticating, but you can have your users within Portal, and that's sort of all possible just through the standard integration between Portal and LDAP. That will not bring the roles in from your LDAP, though. So that is where you could use the new ArcGIS Python API, or you could use PortalPy or probably ArcRest as well to update the roles of the users once they're brought in. as sort of a batch routine. So you can, from Python, you connect to LDAP, and then using one of these modules, you can connect to your portal, and you can update it after the fact. Yep. Yep.
So you're saying with a like a SAML based approach that you've got to always authenticate your script before it can actually run?
Anytime you hit any kind of AGO layer, you've got to have a pop-up box. You used to be able to say, you know, log in using a password, you could sign in the portal.
I'm not sure I'm following.
This is what you were talking about the other day.
When Evan did his demo where he switched over to a SAML-based identity provider, he got the pop-up in a web browser. So that's obviously not going to work in like a headless scheduled thing. So I think the question is, can you do that, or how do you do that in such a way where the user doesn't need to interactively put in a username and password? You cook that into the script, basically, and then you can run. So I think there's a couple ways. I guess one is you can, like the first script that Evan showed had built-in accounts, and so you can use the built-in accounts with the traditional generate token operation to connect with not a SAML or enterprise identity, but with a built-in ArcGIS identity. So you could create, even if you're using SAML and enterprise logins, you could still create an account called, you know, automation admin or something like that as a built-in account, and then use that to authenticate with a generate token endpoint. I think you were saying there is a workflow for using SAML and enterprise logins in a headless environment. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's right. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah. So I actually neglected to show this page, even though I meant to. So this is actually where you register an application in your portal. And so that lets you then generate an app ID and an app secret. And you can use those two in conjunction to create a headless experience so that your script is authenticating itself. And then you can actually take that a step further. And rather than using the standard token lifetime, I think the max lifetime of a token you can generate is it's either 1 week or two weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. But when you're doing it through app authentication, you can actually then get a refresh token endpoint so that you can just have your script basically, if that life has expired, the script can refresh itself. So it just kind of will keep going through. Are the data-driven pages in, is this in ArcGIS Desktop? Yeah. Maybe afterwards we can talk a little bit more, because with the token, it should authenticate and. Yeah, let's talk more afterwards, because I think there is a way. I'd like to get just more details.
Other questions?
So these. So the question was, in order to start leveraging these Python modules, do you need, so you have an environment where you're using ArcGIS Server in conjunction with ArcGIS Online. And so do you need Portal for ArcGIS to take advantage of this, and would it be recommended to instantiate Portal for ArcGIS on all of your servers? I think to the first question, you don't need Portal for ArcGIS to leverage these libraries. So there's two ways of looking at the... a couple things. The ArcRest, PortalPy, those things that you can find on GitHub today, those are just pure Python modules. You can download them. You can work with ArcGIS Online, or you can work with Portal for ArcGIS. They essentially work the same way with both. When it comes to the ArcGIS Python API, there's also two ways of looking at that. You can get involved with it today and download the module. It's delivered through Anaconda or Conda, and you can start working with it, and you can point it at Portal for ArcGIS or ArcGIS Online. And so that's possible today with beta. Now, when it comes to how the notebook capability, this idea of hosted notebooks, and will hosted notebooks, as opposed to being something that I download and set up, will hosted notebooks ship with Portal for ArcGIS, or will they be part of ArcGIS Online? I think that's still being worked out. But I would encourage you to get involved in the beta program, and we'll probably be releasing more about that as it comes to light. In terms of the question about should you be standing up Portal for ArcGIS on all of your servers, I'd say probably not, unless you need to have different, you know, web GISs and destinations for all of your different users. I will say that there are some new advanced capabilities that will require Portal for ArcGIS. So if we think about your web GIS as being both the place where people go and they work on their GIS and they collaborate, and you have your portal as a destination, if you only need one destination and you're happy with that being ArcGIS Online, you don't need Portal for ArcGIS as a second one. However, if you do want to do the publication of 3D scene services, or you want to do real-time, and moving into 10.5, you want to leverage some of the new geo-analytics and raster analytic capabilities, those will require Portal for ArcGIS. So that might be something to think about as you start leveraging the more advanced GIS capabilities. Yep. Great. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, you can do that. So PortalPy, that was one of the most common use cases for PortalPy, and the new ArcGIS Python API can also do some of that. Maybe I'll just bring this over real quick. There we go. So let me just go back to the Python API sample notebooks. I think in here, so here's a use case. So we've created a web map object from this World Cities item, and then I'm going through all of the operational layers in the web map, checking to see if, you know, any of them point to this old server and point it to the new one.
Is this me?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Okay. So, just an example, but yes, you can. Yep. Any other questions? Yeah.
Can you explain the concept of the notebook again and how you get it?
Yeah. Let me just, I'll just show you quickly what the experience would be like if you sign up for the beta. So you get started. You need to first get Conda, which is delivered through this thing called Anaconda, which is Conda. If you're familiar with Python, there's pip, which is a package manager. There's also virtual ENV, which is an environment manager. So Conda is kind of like both of those things wrapped in. And then Anaconda is a Conda implementation that also comes with a lot of libraries. And so I think it's the Jupyter notebooks are part of Anaconda. So when you get Conda as part of this, it lays down that hosted notebook capability. And then you're using the Conda package manager to load ArcGIS. And then you just run this command from you know, your console to start Jupyter Notebook. And you can see it's running here on port 8888, so it's got like a little web server, and I can start working with Python here. Now, this is probably not going to be how it's, or not the only way that it's delivered as part of the product when it's released. I mean, I'm kind of speculating here, but you might imagine this as being similar to Web App Builder. You know, maybe there's an addition that you can download and work with outside of a portal, but I think we are envisioning that these hosted notebooks will be like more ingrained as part of the platform, and there would be this idea of a hosted notebook maybe as an item in your portal, and this capability is just part of it. Because I think we do see this as being like a trade craft, like a piece of, there's a story map, which is a way of communicating what happened, and this is sort of the view into how all of that worked. And so there will be a deeper level of integration as well, but that's what we're still kind of working out.
Yeah. I think part of that idea is like, you know, one user of this capability might be a data scientist who's going to run all sorts of analytics and capture those variables and considerations that they used in their analysis, and then can just save it as an item within the portal, and then can share it to a group of other data scientists or other users, and they can do what-if analysis. Well, what if the rain is only 7 inches instead of 12 inches? What's the flooding then, right? You know, those sorts of things. So there definitely is a longer-term vision for this. It's pretty exciting.
Is this available where? I'm sorry? Oh, in Linux? I assume today it is. That's a good question. I haven't tried.
I think it's just I have it on my Mac. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's Anaconda for different distributions and stuff. Yeah. And I'm sure when it does eventually ship with Portal for ArcGIS, it would work on both the Linux and Windows version, I'm sure.
Does they have the way of
2.7 Python? Like, I think it only works with 3.5.
Yes, I think it's 3.
Today.
3 or better. I think it's 3.5 currently.
Anaconda is a wrapper for the Python install. Like, the modules live in their own environment, so they're not going to affect any of the 2.7 modules
that I have. Oh, I see. Like, so you already have 2.7 running, and you want to...
You ran into that.
Yes. Mate, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so it lays down additional Python environments. That's part of the virtual environment Whit was describing. That bit me, you know, the first time I did it, because it had appended the new Anacondas to my path. And so by default, it was going to 3.5 instead of my 2.7 install. So there's a way to manage that I have to figure out after this. But it maintains all the environments. So you'll have 2.7 and 3.5 on one machine. Yeah, the way I've seen it is that depending on where you do your Python from, Anacondas and Jupyter Notebooks are going to use Python 3 because that's what they need. But like when I open my command shell, I have an alias of Python 3 to use the 3x install rather than 2.7.
Any other questions? Yeah. Do you know when is it 10.5?
Yeah, the goal is 10.5. That's the goal. I mean, that is towards the end of the year. Yep. In fact, so that's definitely the development goal. Yes, sir.
I think maybe the way to look at Insights is it is an application that's used for doing exploratory sort of analysis. In some ways, that's what this is from a scripting perspective. So I think one way of looking at it is, you know, Insights has various visualizations, and then it has various types of data that it can connect to and has various types of analysis that it can run. Those, we're trying to make those visualizations and those analytics and the supported data like common to the platform. So if you were to go to Insights and do analysis and then you were to come in to the ArcGIS Python API, you'd see similar things and there would be consistency on naming. But in terms of, you know, this would be sort of the scriptable version of what you see in Insights, I think. That's probably a fair way of looking at it.
Yeah, I think so.
Read an Insights dashboard as content.
Okay.
Again, heavy on the speculation side here, but because Insights is powered by your portal or ArcGIS Online org, that's creating content in your WebGIS, and so it's very likely that this notebook would be able to read that as content. I don't know what level of manipulation you might be able to do, but you know, for instance, you can read an operations dashboard as an item, and you're able to see some of the information about that dashboard, what widgets are in there, and some of the information with how they're configured. So it's possible it might be similar to that.
So right now, the notebooks are stored on the local client.
Yeah. They are currently, when you install it, has, like anything else, a place where they're stored. That is configurable, so you can put them on a network if you want. But yeah, but as Whit mentioned, I think, longer term, I think the goal is that you certainly would be able to continue to work in that fashion if you wanted to, but also there will be this new type of item in your WebGIS that recognizes this idea of a Pythonic notebook. And then if we're going to provide that capability in the system, then it only makes sense that we're going to have to provide a runtime environment for those to operate as well. So that's definitely the goal.
Yeah, I think, well, you brought up one of the reasons I think we haven't figured out how this is going to be delivered yet, especially with ArcGIS Online, where, you know, many, many organizations might be running their Python, and something very simple, printing all real numbers, could take things down. So that's something we're looking at. I guess when it comes to, like, a best practice for isolating and managing multiple environments, I don't know what we'll be doing in ArcGIS Online. I know that's something that comes up from time to time with ArcGIS Online, but I think that would probably be a best practice. You know, if you're doing it on premises as well. I know we typically recommend, you know, having at least three environments, and if you're doing portal for ArcGIS, having portal for ArcGIS in each of those environments, and then. You know, you could manage your notebooks in the same way. For having multiple environments, you could have multiple organizations, and we've actually seen some organizations do it that way, having a development, a staging, and a production. There's not a lot of workflows today for moving content between those organizations. That is actually something that we're working on for 10.5. Jack in the plenary talked about portal replication. I think we're mostly talking about it as portal collaboration, portal to portal, portal to online, online to online. And so that will hopefully, among other things, provide a better solution for managing content across portals.